The end of the end in Afghanistan coming up soon, and we're going to talk about it on today's Hot Zone.
This is the Hot Zone. Engaging with the news in a whole new way, international war correspondent Chuck Holton brings insight into areas of crisis and lets you help those affected.
Hey folks, Chuck Holton here. Thanks for watching the Hot Zone. I'm in Panama, and I was just going through some of my old footage and found a bunch of stuff that I shot in Afghanistan. You know, I've got about 10 or 12 trips to Afghanistan, starting, I think the first one was 2008. And so I've got a lot of experience over there. The last time I was in Afghanistan was just about 2 years ago, a little less than 2 years ago, when my son Mason was there. And I want to show you the package that I produced about visiting Mason because I want to give you some context about what's happening right now. So watch this first, and then we'll come back and talk some more.
In Kabul, a weekend celebration turns to horror when a suicide bomber blew himself up during a wedding party, killing 63 people. The massacre is just the latest attack by the group called ISIS-K, the Islamic State affiliate in Afghanistan. The 17,000 coalition troops still stationed here have watched violence like this continue, and there seems to be no end in sight. President Trump has made it clear he does not see an acceptable military solution, and that U.S. troops should not be involved in nation building.
Look, we're there for one reason. We don't want that to be a laboratory, okay? It can't be a laboratory for terror.
American troops on the ground have transitioned in recent years to a role they call advise and assist. But that doesn't mean they don't have anything to do. On the contrary, the drawdown from more than 100,000 troops has left the few that remain spread thin across the country. For the 501st Aviation Regiment out of Fort Bliss, Texas, the 7 months they've spent in country has been extremely busy. Major Robbie Flowers commands a company of medevac helicopters that cover the entire country.
We have four full crews for two mission lines that will be on duty for the next 24 hours. So we have a first up lead aircraft and chase aircraft, and then a second up lead and chase aircraft. First up is primary on call for any medevac or TACAVAC, which is a patient transfer mission. And then second up is on call for any mass casualties, or in case first up is gone on a mission and we receive a follow-on mission.
One of the very first embeds I ever did in Afghanistan was with another medevac unit right in this same spot from the 101st Airborne. Well, a lot has changed in the war in the last 12 years, but some things remain the same. One of them is just how vital this mission happens to be. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to come here this trip, but there's another special reason I wanted to embed with this particular unit, and that's because of one special soldier that's serving here for the last 6 months or so.
My oldest son, Mason, is here on his first combat deployment as a crew chief in the medevac unit.
Here's my boy!
We even got to go flying together.
First time my dad went to Afghanistan, I was about 12 years old. I remember being a little bit worried about him not coming back. And then once he came back, I remember seeing the footage that he took over here. I remember seeing blown up Humvees, people getting drug out, brought back to the helicopter and getting flown away. And I always remember thinking it looked so cool, it looked like the Wild West. Being a part of Dust Off is probably the most rewarding mission set, I would say, out here. We're trying to help people, keep them alive, and get them back to a place where they can get a higher level of care. Honestly, it's not unexpected for my dad to come out here to Afghanistan. I would be almost more surprised if he hadn't come out to Afghanistan. But I'm just glad everything worked out and that his trip worked so that he could come out here.
And there's no shortage of wounded. Mason's unit can get called on to respond in minutes, any time of the day or night.
Without fail, I take my pants off, take my shirt off, and we get a mission.
So I'm here in the ready room where they are preparing to go on a mission, and right behind me on the television is more news from El Paso, the hometown of this unit, about the horrific shooting that happened there. And so aside from the concern that these guys have getting ready to go out and put their lives on the line here in Afghanistan, they've got to have this on their minds, thinking about their loved ones back in El Paso.
I'd never have believed that one day I'd be reporting from Afghanistan, riding on missions with my own son. But after 18 years, America's longest war may finally be winding down. And if President Trump has his way, these may be some of the last Americans to ever deploy here. From Bagram Air Base, I'm Chuck Holton for CBN News.
Okay, so you see, they were starting the drawdown under Donald Trump, and in reality, Trump and Biden don't disagree a whole lot on what ought to be done in Afghanistan. I think everybody's kind of figured out that there's not a military solution to this because you can't kill the whole country. And the U.S. military does an abysmal job at nation building, but a very good job at spending money. So we've been spending something like $1 billion a week for 20 years in Afghanistan. And unfortunately, I mean, we do have a lot to show for it in terms of women's rights, in terms of, you know, just infrastructure that we've built, and in terms of the size and the overall training level of the Afghan military. However, the Taliban has been just biding its time, just waiting. And now what we see is that the Taliban are swiftly retaking the country. They already hold over a third of Afghanistan and will most likely take over Afghanistan completely after we pull out. There's still going to stay about 650 troops in Afghanistan for the time being. The things that I'm reading here say roughly 650 troops are expected to remain in Afghanistan to provide security for diplomats after the main American military force completes its withdrawal, which is set to be largely done in the next 2 weeks. So this is happening fast, folks. Now, I want to talk about how the actual cost. Now, aside from the trillions of dollars we've spent in these wars, let's talk about the cost in human life. Most people know, if you've paid any attention at all, that we've lost about 2,400 troops in Afghanistan over 20 years. But that's not the true cost, because the United States for many years, even going back to 2009, has been farming out much of the fight to contractors in Afghanistan that are there to do even military missions. I've been on missions that didn't have any American Army troops or Marine Corps troops or anything on there. The only troops that were there were some special forces from like New Zealand and stuff like that, or Norway, and then Afghan troops and maybe a couple of like USDEA agents or something like that. But the vast majority of the people that were doing those missions were either special forces or they were U.S. contractors. And why did the U.S. use contractors? Because it was cheaper in the long run, both in terms of finances and in terms of political capital. See, when a contractor gets killed, you don't hear about it so much. But when a U.S. troop gets killed, everybody hears about it. And so politicians were much more willing to sacrifice Americans as long as they didn't wear the uniform of the United States. And so take a guess how many contractors, American citizens, that we've lost in Afghanistan over the time that we've been there. It's not 2,400, it's 3,800. So we've lost almost 50% more, like 40% more contractors, American citizens in Afghanistan than we have the actual troops. Not to mention, this will blow your mind, how many Afghan troops have been lost in this war, something like 66,000 Afghan troops. Those guys die like flies. They're unbelievable. And so 66,000 Afghan troops. And then let's talk about the cost in human capital. The people who have fled Afghanistan because of the conflict, a number in the millions, nearly 3 million people, something like 2.7 million Afghans have fled their country. And guess where they have gone? They've gone mostly to Europe. Some people have gone to the United States as well. And so there's costs involved there that will be ongoing for Europe and for the United States for many years to come. And so it's been a fiasco in Afghanistan pretty much from day one. Not that the U.S. military did a bad job. The military did an excellent job at doing its job, which is to kill people and break things. The U.S. military, here's what we should have done. What we should have done in Afghanistan was go over there and destroy the Taliban that was ruling the country, reset their country for them, put a new ruling coalition in power, and then leave. And then just pull out and just say, you guys can make whatever you want to out of this country. We don't care as long as it doesn't become a threat to us. We will be your best friend or your worst enemy. So we're leaving. You guys have a nice day. And then we let them rebuild their own country. And then we tell them, if you become a threat to our country once again, we'll be back. And we'll reset your country for you once again. And we'll keep doing this all day long. We'll do this as much as we need to do it until you get it right, in so much as you won't be a threat to the United States. And that may very well be what we end up doing here, because we're going to leave, the Taliban's going to take over, and once that happens, we may have to go back in there again and reset their country again. Hopefully we won't make the same mistake we made last time and stick around for 20 years and spend trillions of dollars on a Chinese credit card. But you can bet that aside from the Taliban, as we are pulling out in the next couple of weeks, there are two other countries that are very excited to get their hands, to fill that vacuum that's going to be left by the United States, that vacuum of power, and that is Iran and China. How do we know this? Well, we know this because the Afghan themselves, especially the leadership, are very strongly positioning themselves to try to cozy up to either Iran or China after we're gone, because there's a big problem for people who have cooperated with the United States once we pull out. As a matter of fact, there are a tremendous number of Afghan translators, people who have worked as translators for the United States, who are begging the U.S. to let them into the United States, give them visas to come to the U.S. because they are walking dead men in Afghanistan as long as the Taliban are in charge. And that's about what's going to happen. Anybody who's got money has been taking it from that's been in power, that's been cooperating with the Americans. They've already got a plan to go to Abu Dhabi or go to Qatar or go to somewhere else and take them whatever money they've been able to skim off of the billions and billions of dollars the United States has sent there. If I sound cynical, I don't mean to. I just am trying to be realistic. And the realistic, the truth of the matter is, we had to learn warfare almost from scratch, all over again in 9/11. And we, again, the U.S. military is second to none at killing people and breaking things. We're really, really good at that. And we did that. We took out the Taliban in a matter of weeks back in 2001. At that point, we should have said, okay, you know, whoever's going to run this country now, it's all yours. We'll, sayonara. And if you become a threat to us, we'll be back. Don't worry. But then we should have just left them alone. We've doubled the literacy rate in Afghanistan since we got there. 12% to, I don't know, maybe 30% or maybe a little higher than that. So what? So more Afghans can read. They're a little better educated. If China and Iran come in there and the Taliban takes over again, that's going to go backwards very fast, and their education level is not really going to matter a whole lot. You've got a whole bunch of people who have grown up, a generation of people who have grown up in Afghanistan with the American presence, and they're going to wonder what to do now. Most of them, believe it or not, don't have a negative image of America. They actually like Americans, most of the young people in Afghanistan, and that may redound to our favor. That's mostly because American soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines are good people. And we do good things when we're around. People get, you know, kids get candy and people get safe when the United States shows up. We don't fly our flag over any country except in blessing. But sometimes our blessing hurts pretty bad. And I think you can hear it when you listen to the leadership of Afghanistan and how they're talking about us now. After 20 years of spending our blood and treasure in that country, they're very happy to see us go. And so they're going to put on a good show. The Afghan leadership, the president and his advisors and stuff came to the White House this week and met with Sleepy Joe Biden, which, you know, those guys know each other pretty well because Biden was over there a whole lot during the Afghan war. So for this week's Hot Zones, we're going to take a closer look at what's going on in Afghanistan now and what might happen after it's over. And we're going to listen to some of the leadership in Afghanistan. We're going to listen to American leadership, and we're going to listen to some other experts to see what they think might happen. So stick around for that. That's all we got for today, folks. We will be back again. This is Monday. We'll be back Wednesday and again on Friday with more about Afghanistan, stuff that you literally are not going to see anywhere else. So stay tuned. I'm Chuck Holton. Thanks for watching.
The Hot Zone is produced by Amy Holton and Livefire Media.
Copyright 2021.